You're listening to DottoTech, helping you get the most out of your technology wherever you use it, at home, at school, or at work. Brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. 20 years, the trusted voice of technology in Canada, Steve Dotto.
Hello and welcome to DottoTech. I'm Steve Dotto and we are glad you are joining us this fine September day. Art Factor, how are you today, sir?
Good.
Happy birthday, Art.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm feeling older.
Yeah?
I didn't want to make the show about me, though.
It isn't about you, Art.
I'm good.
But we can make a little bit about you. I want to get back to your birthday in a minute, which we should do. But first, I want to let people know what we have on the show because this is our 72nd show in the history of this fine radio program.
Is that a lucky number for you?
I don't know.
Okay.
But it might be the finest show we've ever assembled.
Wow.
Yeah, it's high praise indeed, or it just speaks to the overall kind of low quality up to now. But it is, today we've got, we're going to talk about Eventbrite. Have you ever heard of Eventbrite?
That's kind of the, kind of like a Facebook invite only without Facebook, right?
No.
Or you can buy tickets, no?
Buying tickets,
okay.
That's it, just so. It is a social media ticket site where you can use it to put on events, charge for tickets, have people pay, do all the transactions, do barcode scanning of tickets at the event, all that sort of stuff. Huge. They've done over 5 million tickets in the last couple of years.
Wow. Are they local?
No, based in San Francisco.
Okay.
But we're going to be talking to one of the founders, Julia Hartz. They are big. I think that they are changing the world. And you know how I feel about tickets because I've got this massive hate on over Ticketmaster.
Constantly. Oh, we all do.
Yeah, they don't sponsor the show, do they?
I hope. No, well, if they were going to, they're not going
over.
To anymore.
It would be over. Yeah, we won't be hearing any Ticketmaster spots. But no, Ticketmaster, I can't stand the fact that they charge us for tickets that I print myself. I just find it unconscionable that if I am saving them the money of printing, that they charge me a quote-unquote convenience fee. Drives me nuts.
I think paying $12 for a $60 ticket.
It's abhorrent. It's abhorrent.
For what?
It's extortion of a form. I probably shouldn't say that, but I feel that way. That's me personally feeling that way. We've also got on the show today, back to school, in celebration of back to school. We have to think about the computers that kids are using in schools. And we have computers for schools here in BC, which has done just a tremendous job of getting computers into students' hands across the province. But this is kind of like accident long weekend week for the blood bank. At the end of the summer, computer for schools reservoirs are nearly empty because all the schools have been ordering computers. So if you have a business, if you have a computer, some computers, if you're upgrading, think about donating them to computers for schools and see that those computers are A, recycled, which is green, B, put in the hands of the schools where they can do some good. So Miriam Waddington will be joining us to discuss just that. And we've also got a new guest. Ben Abel is going to be joining us. He's the co-founder of VancouverGadgets.ca. We're going to be talking gadgets. We're going to be talking BlackBerry World. RIM came through last week. We didn't even know. With the big international BlackBerry World tour, mainly talking to developers. Ben was there, so we'll have a chat with him about what's happening in the world of RIM.
I forgot that they even sold those things.
Yeah. You know, it was funny because a couple of nights ago we were watching, because the new movie's out, the new Bourne movie is out, I wanted to watch the first three Bournes. Now, I've heard that the new one isn't that good, so I might not go to it, but I watched the first three again, which I think were exceptional action movies, just exceptional, especially when I've just watched them again over the last 2 weeks. But in the third one, which was in 2007 that they produced it, it was really funny and dated because while they're doing all this funky stuff with the smartphones, one of the people says, I want all their information. I want everything on their BlackBerries.
Well, it's government, though. So technically,
I guess
it could have stretched up until last year.
Yeah, it could have. But you just don't. I turned to Shannon and said, you don't hear that anymore. Mm-mm. You just don't hear. I want everything on the BlackBerry. Well, you wouldn't hear that anyways, typically. But, you know, we don't hear the smartphone referred to as a BlackBerry. You know, what's on your BlackBerry? Where's your BlackBerry? We ask, where's your iPhone now? Probably. Or where's your phone? But the BlackBerry is losing it. It was ubiquitous with smartphone for a period of time.
No. And I saw the story a couple of days ago, probably the first time in how many months that the iPhone, actually Samsung's phones were outselling iPhones for the week or something.
I think there's a backlash to Apple's lawsuit, and not the one that people might think it is. People might be saying, wait a minute, if Apple's suing Samsung because their phones are just the same and their phones are cheaper, why don't I just buy their phones.
The lawsuit was just free publicity for Samsung to say, hey, if you want something exactly like an iPhone, but for a few hundred dollars cheaper, why not get ours?
That's the possibility of that. Now, I want to get to this because this is important. It is your birthday today. Is it a big one? Is this one of the big ones with a zero behind it?
No.
Are you 40?
No, of course not. If I was 40 and being your work radio slave, I would find an app on my iPhone to shoot myself and shoot myself. No offense.
How popular do you think you are?
How popular do I think I am?
Yeah. How many people do you think have wished you birthday greetings today?
It's surprising. Every year it's surprising. I think it's just because in radio you tend to you lose your job and you start with a new company, and then it's a whole new pool of people.
And you're a pretty gregarious guy. You got a big smile on, and you seem to remember everybody's name. And it's amazing the amount of time guests have come into this show from completely left field, and they've known Art. You're like, you might be Mr. Social. You might be Mr. 604.
I don't mean to be, though. That's the thing. I've just been in different studios and different places, and I do comedy. And when you put yourself out like that, then people tend to remember you.
So once again, I say, how many people have wished you a happy birthday today?
Over 100-something.
Yeah. I'm looking on your Facebook because I just posted on Facebook to say happy birthday. Because Facebook is the easy way to say happy birthday. It means you don't have to phone people up and engage in a phone call. So people who you want to wish happy birthday to that you don't want to talk to, you actually can do it on Facebook. I love that idea. 121. You're up to 121.
Holy.
Holy moly.
What I find funny is that Facebook makes you feel good because, yes, it's really easy for people to jump on and say happy birthday really quickly. But then Twitter's like that. Facebook is like a dog that it comes and greets you and it loves you and it kisses you. And Twitter is like a cat where you have to work for it and say, hey, everybody, it's my birthday. So then it can go, hey, it's your birthday. Or else
back,
I don't. Nobody. I had absolutely no traction on my Twitter today.
Did you say it's my birthday on Twitter?
I mentioned it. I said, because I was walking, I was heading to London Drugs by the station here and walked by the liquor store and they're on strike.
Yeah.
And I said, the BC liquor store is on strike. Is that for my birthday? Doesn't seem appropriate. Just to see if anyone, and nothing.
Yeah.
Twitter is the cat of the social media world.
That's an interesting perception. That's pretty good.
Thank you.
You know, if I ever do any stand-up comedy on technology, I might steal that.
It's yours. Use it.
No, you're going to use it.
Okay, I will.
You can use it. Yeah, you should use it.
I'm going to sit in the back during your talk and be like, you stole that.
It is a funny bit. And September is awesome because September is now Slingbox month. On Dottotech. Our good folks at Slingbox have come back, and they're giving us not one, but two Slingboxes to give away.
So one for you, one for me?
No, none for you.
Oh.
None for you, and I've got one.
I've got one too. No, I've got one.
I do need one.
Paul DeMara, we traded.
What did you give Paul?
Well, I still owe him dinner, but one day I will pay him back.
Okay. If you come to the website now, we're giving away a Slingbox Pro plus a Sling Link. I have to be careful with that Sling Link. That's a tough one. And we're also giving a Slingbox Solo and a Sling Link.
Ooh.
So we're giving two great combinations. The Sling Link is for networking within your house, so you don't have to put the Slingbox right beside everything. But it's a pretty cool combination. And you used it you were just down in California.
Yes, I was. And the hotel, the Vintners Inn in Healdsburg, California, had amazing Wi-Fi. Like once you walked onto the area, the Wi-Fi was super strong wherever you went, and I was able to stream movies and Netflix, and I wanted to watch right before bed instead of turning on my loud big TV. I just watched a bit of Food Network Canada on my iPhone, and I was good to go.
Yeah.
Turn it off, and then boom, I push your button, go to sleep, I'm good.
So you're endorsing. So you don't need Slingbox. You don't need to win this one.
No, I don't.
And it's your birthday. You might get one for your birthday.
I can have them. Yeah. Well, I do need to upgrade, I suppose. I've got like the first generation Slingbox.
Yeah, we'll wait till you upgrade your iPhone. That's going to be next week.
Yes, can't wait.
We're going to have to talk about it. Let's take a quick break. And when we return, we are going to be talking Eventbrite.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Do you have a comment or question for Dottotech? Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. Dottotech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
Joining me online now is Julia Hartz. Julie, along with her husband Kevin, are the co-founders of Eventbrite. It is a Web 2.0 ticket
I guess, ticket selling application that allows organizers to take their event, offer it over the internet, offer it through a web interface, allowing people to register for pretty much any type of event painlessly. And I have to ask you right off the top, how are you guys different than Ticketmaster? Because if there's one company in the world that drives me absolutely nuts, it's Ticketmaster. So you don't charge me to print my own tickets, do you?
Well, I think fundamentally our difference between really any sort of incumbent ticket player is in our mission. Our mission is to democratize the ticketing industry. So it's to take all the types of technology out there that lies within, things that we're talking about now, and mobile and social and big data and the cloud, and also all the types of web tools that are out there. We package it in a really easy to use service that anybody can use to sell tickets online to an event. It's completely self-service. It doesn't take any sort of knowledge of technology really to get started. And you can be selling tickets in minutes. So I think I just said a lot of things that are different.
You did. Let's start with the beginning. So you can start at the absolute basic level, which is if you have a small event, you're giving a speaking engagement, or you have just 20, 30, 40 people, numbers that would not historically allow you to engage in any sort of formalized ticket process, you can actually start to use your services at that level and then grow.
Right. You can have a free meetup. You could be gathering, 10 people around a common passion or interest. You could be teaching a yoga class, or you could be throwing a 100,000 person salsa congress. All of those things live harmoniously on one platform. And that's sort of the beauty of this disruptive technology that really democratizes an industry, is that it doesn't matter who you are, what size of event, what type, even if you're charging or not, Eventbrite is a solution that works for everybody.
Okay. Let's just walk me through what an organizer might do. And let's say it's going to be that you're teaching a class. I'm a great barbecuer. So I'm teaching a barbecuing class, which is going to be awesome because I'm going to show my famous beer can chicken. So what do I do then to organize the event? What's the process that I go through and the benefits that I get along the way?
Great. So you'd come to Eventbrite. You'd immediately start entering in your event details, the title, the details of your event, where it is, when it is, who you are. There's an ability to move quickly through that process on Eventbrite, but you can also spend some time customizing your page. So let's say you have an awesome logo that showcases your beer can chicken.
Yeah.
You can upload that. You can tweak the colors and the style of the page to really match your brand. Then you publish your event. That can literally take 5 minutes. And that the next part is really the engine of Eventbrite. It's how you promote your event. So let's say obviously you probably have a lot of fans of your beer can chicken, so you have a built-in audience. But let's say you don't. By publishing Eventbrite on Eventbrite, you're able to send your event out to a whole host of syndicated event sites, so places that people go to find things to do. It also lives on Eventbrite, which is becoming a destination for people to come to find things to do. And then it also gets search engine optimized. So that means if somebody is Googling beer can chicken making on a Friday night, your event page is actually going to show up in the top results because of all the magic we do on the back end. So there's a lot of invisible tactics that we take to help promote a public event. But then there's also things that are familiar to maybe the average web user, which is we have so many different touch points in which you yourself can be promoting your event on social channels, but also most importantly, people interested in your event or your fan base and your attendees can act as event promoters on your behalf. They can share the event online. They can promote it on Twitter. And we see real results that track back to how much revenue is made by the event organizer, how many visits are sent back to the event page.
So more than just the support of managing the tickets and actually handling all of the different administrative functions, which is a huge deal, you folks have really stepped up the game as far as incorporating social media marketing, helping me promote, actually helping your clients promote their activities. And that's all pretty much gratis because you're only paying based on per ticket sales, right?
Exactly. Our only revenue source is the ticket fee, which is 2.5% plus 99 cents. Now, we don't charge if your event is free. It's based on the ticket price. So if you want to host a free event, it's Eventbrite is completely free to use. And I think that comes back to the fundamental point of helping people sell more tickets and host more live experiences. And that comes back to our mission, which kind of separates us from the rest.
What if it's a fundraiser? What if it's a what if it's for a charity?
So we have a special fundraising rate, which is a little bit less than what we normally charge. And that's for nonprofits who are raising money. But we find that actually the value proposition is not necessarily in the sort of discounted fee. It's more in how we bring people to that event. Yeah. And what we try to express to nonprofits is it's, you know, hosting an event to raise money can seem like a pretty big task and a pretty hard way to raise money. But it's actually beyond raising money, it's raising the awareness of the nonprofit, and it's getting people to understand your mission and be sort of offline with you and understanding what you're about and sort of building that affinity with your nonprofit.
Let's talk about the types of events that you support, because obviously for the, you know, things like these classes and that would be perfect. But they're all kind of festival seating type arrangements. What do you do about for like a dance school or something like that might have actual registered seats that you have to assign people to?
So right now, Eventbrite is focused around general admission events. Okay. And, you know, reserve seating is certainly something that we're looking at. We definitely want to redefine how reserve seating is handled and redefine the box office. So, you know, that's sort of back in our, what I would call our research lab right now. But right now, we're focused on events where no matter what ticket you buy, you know, you're entering the event, you're sort of all on the same level. And that is a huge market, if you can imagine.
It works for trade show. It works for any festival seating environment, any trade show type environment, that sort of stuff as well. What about virtual events? Are you doing anything in the space of non-physical events?
We do. We've supported webinars from the beginning, for example. I think that, you know, for Eventbrite, it's a seamless integration. There's so many ways in which you can customize the messaging and the integration points to a webinar. And that, to us, is, you know, just as much of an opportunity as any. We have some really great stories, actually, of Eventbrite users who had been doing their jobs sort of the hard way, traveling around the world, you know, teaching these classes, and were sort of missing out on life. And so they decided to, you know, redefine their business and make their business more of an online virtual type experience. And they used Eventbrite to build that engine, to really build their base.
Wow. That I think that for anybody who's ever put on any sorts of seminars and webinars, which I've done, I've been a speaker in a lot of events, that organizational challenge, but the marketing challenge, that to me is the biggest challenge, because there's such a fear factor in deciding, okay, I'm actually going to put this event on, because you have a lot of money up front before you ever collect any money down the back end. So it's quite a challenging entrepreneurial experience.
Yeah. It is. It's also anxiety ridden. I mean, anybody who has actually hosted an event knows that is full of anxiety, just like, you know, you just mentioned. But where Eventbrite supports those points where somebody would actually feel anxious is we support the promotion of an event, not only on the ways that I told you about, but also providing ways for you maybe a more savvy marketer to think about how to create dynamic pricing, or how to create discount codes, or how to create affiliate tracking links to get, you know, your supporters to really get the word out about your event and see how much traffic they're actually sending you. All of those things are baked into the product and, you know, essentially are free, as you mentioned, because we're only charging that fee if you actually succeed and sell tickets, which is where our interests are aligned. And so I think that's really where we help support the sort of do-it-yourselfer and the startup entrepreneur in hosting events.
Okay, let's take it downstream a little bit. So the person buying the ticket now, they go, they click on an Eventbrite link, links that you guys create, so you've got a good shopping cart experience. In the past, I've registered for events or purchased tickets. The code comes to my smartphone. I can print the ticket off at no charge. What a concept. So now the organizer has they've got a database, I guess, of all of the different registrations. They've got we're now approaching the event. What tools are there for the organizer to make sure that their event runs smoothly, the right people get in, and they can handle all of those logistical things at the time of the event?
So that's really where mobile comes into play. You know, Eventbrite is a technology company first and foremost. We're in the heart of Silicon Valley. Our roots are steeped in technology. So our commitment is to always be on the bleeding edge of where technology is taking us. And mobile is where we're going, right? So that, you know, this, we're at the sort of intersection of these really exciting trends. And the day of event is all about mobile, because mobile provides the opportunity for an event organizer to turn their smartphone into a barcode scanning device. It's a free application you download. If you have a smartphone, Android or iPhone, you can use that to actually scan the barcodes that are built into our PDF tickets that people get via email and print at home. Or the attendee now has the option of pulling that barcode up on their smartphone, and you have a smartphone-to-smartphone magical union that, you know, creates a really great entry into the event. It keeps the those lines moving. It keeps everybody feeling great about the event. The entry is the first impression that an attendee has to an event. So yes, it's very important for us to create a delightful experience, not just one that is efficient, but also is delightful. So you can imagine people's reactions when somebody whips out an iPhone and scans their ticket. There's sort of that wow factor. We also allow event organizers to now capture day of event revenue. So typically, at the door sales happen via cash box or didn't happen at all. And what we've done is we've built a at the door box office on the iPad that allows anybody to scan credit cards or accept cash, but most importantly, capture the attendee information. Now they can enter a name and an email that just gets placed into the back end of Eventbrite, and now is, you know, on that attendee list so that the event organizer can market future events to that person instead of just having them be an anonymous person that showed up at the door.
And that's a hardware and software solution, but the hardware is very inexpensive.
Right. The hardware is very inexpensive. We actually have, you know, solutions that we ship out to larger events. But, you know, the basis of really that democratization is building an app that integrates with hardware that people are already purchasing, right? So you don't have to go out and buy a huge new setup for a box office or spend a lot of money on scanners that really are obsolete anywhere else in your life. You actually, it's built into things that you use as a consumer, you know, and you can utilize them as an organizer.
So as an event organizer, I have my iPad for, is it $10, I think? I buy a barcode scanner a scanning pad from you that I can swipe the credit cards, and then the transaction all occurs through PayPal, so I don't even need a merchant account or anything, right?
Exactly. And essentially, if you really want to get down to the nitty-gritty, this entire experience is free of charge to the event organizer. You know, attendees are somewhat accustomed to paying fees. Unfortunately, they're usually exorbitant fees. Well, at Eventbrite, we've, you know, tailored that down to a digestible amount that the event organizer can pass on to the attendee.
And you cap that, don't you? You cap the amount of the charge at, is it $10?
We do cap the amount at $9.95. So it doesn't matter how big of a ticket you're selling. So you see kind of higher ticket prices in things like conferences. We're not charging, you know, a sliding scale there. We're actually capping our fee.
There you go. Now, I did have one other brilliant question along the box of this, around the scanner. But I've lost it. So I've used your service. I like it allows a small independent organization to look big. I mean, the bottom line is that you're it's outsourcing at its best. You're marshaling somebody that's an expert in one field and allowing you to concentrate on your content. Oh, I know what I was going to ask you. I noticed when I was looking at your iPad app that you can actually add some additional items as well, additional revenue items. You could add like a meal, a lunch, or probably parking or a t-shirt. So you can do that and capture that additional revenue around the event at that moment.
Exactly. I mean, you know, at Eventbrite, we try to focus on what we do best, which is really helping the event organizer sell tickets to their event. But we understand that things like merchandise are usually intrinsically tied to a ticket. So an entry into an event is a perfect sort of lead generation for a consumer to be buying merchandise around that event. And it only makes sense that we would help the event organizer capture that additional revenue. You know, but for us, it's all about that seamless experience. So not having two different softwares doing two different things around the same experience.
Julia Hartz is the co-founder of Eventbrite. She must be very proud of her baby. You have two babies, though.
I have three. I have two babies at home, and then Eventbrite is my first baby.
It's eventbrite.com, where there'll be links to our site. Thank you so much for your time, and best of luck.
Thank you.
DottoTech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Do you have a comment or question for DottoTech? Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. DottoTech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
Joining me online now is Mary M. Waddington, the director of the Computers for Schools program for years. How many years has Computers for Schools been around in BC now?
18.
18 years. And you haven't been with them since the beginning, have you, Mary M.?
No, not that long.
Just 14 years. But for a very long time, doing a very good job. What Computers for Schools does is they take computers that are no longer wanted in, usually from the business environment, but are still very good, and they refurbish them and get them placed in schools where they can be used and become part of our education system at obviously a significantly reduced cost to the schools. And what's the number you guys have done so far?
We're at 123,000 right now, but we're definitely almost on task for 125,000, and we're looking to celebrate that in October.
125,000 computers. I mean, put it in perspective. If each computer is touched by 30 kids a year, which is a small number for the when you consider how many computers there might be, you've actually been a resource for millions and millions of students for the past two decades going through the British Columbia system.
It has, yeah, and definitely across Canada because it is a national program. We have it well achieved over our millionth computer. We celebrated that in 2010 in Ottawa, and we also like to think now that we've been around for 18 years, kids have gone through the entire educational career, kindergarten to grade 12, and what's been on their desks, Computers for Schools equipment.
And they're at the point where they've been in business long enough that they should be retiring some computers from their office and sending them back into the system.
Yeah, well, there's a good educational story that we tell, but also the environmental one where the equipment isn't in the business anymore, but it's still a good piece of equipment and can still be readily used in the education system, and we extend the useful life of those computers by double.
Let me ask you about your business cycle, because we're just heading into September now. And so is there a rush on orders where schools are ordering computers from you during the summer? And do you actually have inventory fluctuation levels?
We do have inventory fluctuation levels. It is traditionally slower in the summer, obviously, with schools being closed. It's harder to deliver. Mm-hmm. It's just a logistics challenge. But definitely once teachers start coming back into the classrooms and looking around and seeing what their student enrollment numbers are going to be and in the classroom, they look at getting some more equipment in there. But the tech managers have certainly been at work all summer long and getting lots of different projects underway.
Okay. So let's walk through a little bit about what happens with the computers first, and then we'll talk about what businesses do to make sure that they can participate and help out with the program. So when we donate a computer to you, what are the basic limitations or the basic system requirements you're looking for these days?
We're still looking for a Pentium 4 3.0 and higher, but the real demand right now is for the dual core level.
Okay.
So that's kind of like the money computer right now that we're looking for.
Okay, so those dual core Pentiums are golden, but they are being retired from business on a fairly regular basis. Now, are we seeing a lot more notebooks moving into your system than just desktops now?
Yeah, we actually do get a lot of laptops and notebooks. BC Hydro has been a fantastic donor for laptops over the last 6 months as they've been doing their refresh. Mm-hmm. So we're really grateful to them for they've been supporting the program for practically the whole 18 years as well. So
what's the, when a business then donates their computers, what do they have to do to prepare the computer to get to you as far as dealing with their privacy and data, those things? And then what happens to that computer once it moves into your system?
Well, they are responsible for the information on their computer under PIPEDA legislation, so they should be wiping their hard drive before they give it to us. Regardless of whether the donor wipes it or not, we wipe it again anyways, just to have that secondary level of assurance. And once the hard drive is wiped, then it goes through a process. We reload the operating system, make sure all the new drivers are loaded, put a Windows operating system on there, and physically clean the inside and outside of the case so that even though it is a used computer, it looks like a new one when it is received by the school.
Who does that work? Is that employees? How do you staff your service?
We get funding through HRSDC to hire youth who are going through some post-secondary education in technical careers. Oh, okay. And so we hire them for a 26-week work term to get their hands-on experience on the hardware level. So it's a good gap for those students who are having maybe more challenges with the book learning to actually get their hands dirty and in these cases and really figure out what it is that they're doing and what their passion is and how to best utilize their skills moving forward.
And they learn a good skill set as well.
They do. And the good thing is that because we have every kind of computer donated to us, they work on every kind of computer and they know how to open them up, where all the special things are, which are the Lemon brands, which are the really good ones, how to, each case has its own little proprietary systems and things that go in there, so that they really learn it all. But we've had, what have we been doing this? We've been 14 years of students going through this program, and now looking back, we see that they go to work at TELUS, they go to work at Shaw, they get work at RCMP, so that it really is a good training ground for technicians to come in here and do some work experience.
Almost along the lines of a trades training without the official certification, I guess.
It is, yeah, it is. And part of the benefit, too, is that if they do come into us without their A-plus certification, that we help pay for that as well. So just kind of a little added incentive for students to come and work here.
Very nice. So if a business is interested in donating computers, first of all, do you accept individual donations from individuals, or has it got to be from a business?
No, we do accept from individuals as well, but because most schools and school districts in particular want the larger volumes of machines because it's normally going into a lab setting, so that's 30, and they want them all to be identical and standardized. It's really the corporate donation that we do go after. But because we have an extended mandate to go assist not-for-profits and First Nations communities and public libraries as well, we certainly can still make use of those individual computers that come in from donors in those smaller lot donations.
So they can enter into the distance education system, that sort of stuff. They can end up in even in homes and that sort of
thing. Yeah, for sure.
Oh, that's good news. So you're much more than Computers for Schools. You should change your name, because it's not long enough, to Computers for Schools and Libraries and First Nations and other groups that
need
computers.
Exactly. It is kind of a misnomer now, but that's how we were branded. And I know. So every now and then when we get together, there's a bit of a debate. But
now, how much help do you give a company that has 30 or 40 computers getting ready to go out? They're saying, we've got all these computers, but holy cow, you know, how are we going to get them all ready to ship out and do all that sort of stuff?
Basically, we want it to be as easy as making a phone call or sending an email. So once we know how many pieces they have available and which date they want it picked up, then we send a cartage truck around to do all the heavy lifting and take it out, and they bring it to us. And like I said, we wipe the hard drive, hopefully again, and make sure that everything for the company is as easy as possible. And we are also a registered charity, so there's a tax receipt incentive for the donation as well.
Well, that works so well. A crazy question, kind of out of left field, but if a company, like say an accounting firm, was getting rid of stuff, and they're really concerned that even wiping the data from their hard drives might, just the optics of it might not be good enough. If companies were to say, we're going to give you computers, but take out the hard drives, are you accepting them in that case?
We are, if they're at that dual core level, because it is the processor speed that we're really after. And, we do put some money aside to buy extra hard drives.
Okay. Some
companies have even been really generous and purchased new hard drives because they're pulling out their other ones too. So there are ways around that, but certainly we do prefer when all of the internal parts come in together.
Good stuff. So you're heading up to, by October this year, you're hoping to be over the 125,000 computers donated in the province.
Yeah.
And you've got great corporate support. People like TELUS is promoting you this month.
Mm-hmm. TELUS, we're on their calendar, their featured calendar of all the different charities that they support. So September, back to school. Here we are.
Computers for Schools. Maryam Waddington runs the program here in BC. It is also available for anybody listening to us and viewing across the rest of the country. There are Computers for Schools programs. And is every province got one?
Yeah, and the territories.
Thanks so much, and thanks for all the good work you've done. On behalf of the entire province, I think you guys have done a sensational job, and we certainly hope that the new year is bright for you.
Thank you so much, Steve.
Just a reminder that you can drop by and see our website, which contains our great September promo. Slingbox September here on Dottotech. We are giving away two Slingboxes to some lucky listener or visitor to the website. We're giving away a Slingbox Pro HD and a Slinglink, and we're also giving away a Slingbox Solo and Slinglink. And if you don't know, Slingboxes connect to your TV and allow you to watch your TV from any room in the house or anywhere you are.
Even Southern California.
Yes, so you were watching, actually you were watching Paul's TV. Was it?
No. Just his Slingbox.
No, your dad's TV, because he gave you the Slingbox, and you hooked it up to your dad's TV, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
So you were watching your dad's TV from...
Free cable. From Southern California.
I wonder how many parents are doing that, because that is a great idea.
And they don't lose any money.
Yeah. Now, I want to mention something else at the website. We're doing all these demos, the product demos, like we used to do on the TV show, and they're doing really well. People are watching them on YouTube. We're getting lots of nice comments. We have a new one up on Doodle. Have you tried Doodle?
Is that an iPad or an iPhone?
It's an app. It's an app. It's actually a website that you go to, and it allows you to bring people together to schedule events. You know what it's like if you're trying to get like four or five of your buddies together to have lunch?
Mm-hmm.
And how difficult it is. And if you're the one organizing, you go crazy with emails like herding cats, right? Because you got one guy says he can make it, then he can't make it that day. And then and organizing four people is a nightmare. Organizing 20 or 30 is an absolute gong show. So if you're trying to put together an event, a meeting, a birthday party, any of that kind of stuff, you can use Doodle. And what you do is you go into Doodle and you create a poll. And you say, these are the four times for Art's birthday party. Which one works best for you? Hmm. And then you send it out to all the invitees. They go in and they tick off, yes, I can make it, no, I can't make it, or if I have to, I can make it.
And then
you get a summary.
Wins.
You get a summary. Exactly. You get a summary in the end of what works best for all the people. So the person organizing it, really easy. It really works well. Doodle.com. There's a great idea. I think it's great, but then I'm biased. There's about a 6-minute demo. I walk you through the whole product. And it's free. And there's another product they have which allows you to share your calendar with the Doodle calendar so that if you and I are trying to make a phone call or you want to do a recording and you say, I say, pick a time on Friday for it. And you go, well, what's your schedule? So rather than me writing to you my whole schedule, I can just share a link with you. You can actually look at my Google calendar and you can say, I request this time and then I get a meeting request from you after you've looked at my availability.
Hmm.
That's a really cool tool as well.
It's a little work going into it, but I'll watch the video.
Well, it's organization, but you know, the organization doesn't come for free. It you have to do a little bit of work.
Okay.
But once you've linked it to your calendar, it's very powerful. And for things like organizing family get-togethers or birthday parties, that sort of stuff, Doodle. It's a very, very cool tool. Cool Doodle. It's all at dottotech.com.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. You're listening to Dottotech, brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
Joining me online now is Ben Abel. Ben is a co-founder of a blog site, VancouverGadgets.ca, a website dedicated to, of course, Vancouver and gadgets, but goes way beyond that. How are you doing, Ben?
I'm doing great, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing good. It's good of you to join me. Now, last week you got to participate in BlackBerry's world tour. Tell me about that. What were they? They've got this, I think, 10 or 12 city tour that they're going out and trying to drum up support. What was it like?
It was actually really interesting, Steve. And we got the invite. And I think one of the things want to get out off the top is it's not showing anybody any new phones, unfortunately. What it's geared to is for people that are in the development world, that work in the IT field, or developers, work for companies that are really working on developing apps for the BlackBerry. Now, this is based on the fact that it's going to be the BlackBerry 10 OS mm-hmm. and the new devices that are coming out with that. So it's not as quite an exciting or sexy announcement as a new phone just yet, but it gives you some good insight into the BlackBerry ecosystem and what's happening.
What was the attitude like of the developers? First of all, was it well attended? Was there a lot of developers there?
You know what? It was a 5-star event put on at the, I think it was a Four Seasons in Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
Great event, great experience, lovely catered everything. Lots of developers there, lots of enthusiasm.
Was there enthusiasm? Did you feel that the people that were there felt that there was a future for RIM? Because that's the issue now. I mean, they've dropped so quickly and so fast.
I definitely got a sense from that.
Yeah.
I definitely saw some, and I think, you know, if you look at the blog post and look at our YouTube channel for Vancouver Gadgets, there's the interview with Alex Saunders.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when we interviewed Alec, it was like, okay, Alec, you know, we're here as an end consumer blog, a technology blog. We're not a, you know, we're not developers per se. I have some development background with web stuff, but my questions to Alec were, you know, how is this new OS and the new phones going to affect the consumer? And I think there was some definite optimism there. He was very upfront that, you know, he's been questioned by people in the company, is this bound or destined to become the next Nortel?
Yes.
You know, and he says no.
Now, what does he base no on?
He bases no on the fact that they still have, and I quote, correct me if I'm wrong, I'd have to look at the interview a little more closely again, but it was around $2 billion in the bank. And I believe it's over 750 million subscribers.
Yeah.
And you, BlackBerry.
But it's
says not, something.
But that's not growing, it's shrinking. And if it shrinks as fast as it grew, I have some serious concerns about it. You know, yeah, it was interesting.
I think you're exactly right, Steve. And, you know, I think everyone does. And I don't, as I've said before, we've done other radio spots last year, Christmas with Bill Good, when the BlackBerry was really kind of rolling out.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you know, don't want to see a Canadian company fail, but let's wait and see. These new devices, they're really going to have to kick some butt.
They are. Now, what do you sense is going to be RIM's identity as they move forward? Because since you were at the developer conference, they will be talking a lot about kind of the, you know, are they going to be a consumer flashy philosophy? Are they back to basic business? What do you sense their strength is going to be?
I didn't get a lot of that from Alec, to be honest with you, Steve. And I did sort of dive into, you know, what are the new phones going to look like?
Okay, let's talk about that.
If that's any indication, you know, they're obviously moving with the touchscreens, but also the QWERTY keyboard. There's going to be a touchscreen only and a QWERTY only. And I'm assuming there's going to be the combo phones as well.
So that says something. They are maintaining the fixed keyboard.
Yes.
They'll be one of the only.
As far as I'm aware, he said a keyboard model and a touchscreen model. I don't know if there's going to be like some of the 9900s, mm-hmm. if there's going to be a combo. But like I said, you know, I mean, I was diving in looking at the consumer's point of view, right?
Yeah,
saying, you know, what's happening with the consumer and, excuse me, what types of things do you guys have available?
So now looking at kind of the rest of the phone world, Windows Phone 8 is Microsoft's having a big event this week in New York. Lots of different handsets, lots of stuff coming on that front. But probably the most interesting story is last week's story, where Samsung and Apple went toe to toe.
Exactly.
Apple kicked Samsung from pillar to post in a courtroom in California.
And a $1 billion lawsuit. Ouch.
Yeah, that's a lot. So what's your take on that?
Well, my take on it was, you know, we did a blog post on it last week, and I thought it was really interesting. I mean, here again, you have the concern about, you know, copywriting and copying and intellectual property versus the freedom to innovate. And I don't know about you, but I can't remember a time when I haven't done a blog post or looked at somebody's technology and whether I meant to copy it or not.
Yeah.
I've made some, you know, I mean, everybody's influenced by what's out there in the market, right? I mean,
yes.
We've looked at other blogs, people like yourself in the past, you know, that's how we kind of came up with Vancouver Gadgets.
You know, it's interesting. The you know, the lawsuit, the balancing act is Apple.
Yeah.
Proponents will say Apple's patents being protected in this lawsuit.
Exactly.
Means that Apple can safely now invest millions and millions and millions of dollars in development, knowing that their technology will be protected.
Exactly.
The other side of the coin goes, well, wait a minute. Some of the stuff that they are putting out there is more or less self-evident, although one has to question that. But it's self-evident in the fact that other companies now have to stay away from these gesture-based off, or the flat oval, the flat screen with bezeled corners. It means that's going to stifle innovation in others.
Well, that's the main. I mean, and that's the other point. You know, where do these trials in intellectual property get used because there's legitimate ripoffs,
mm-hmm.
and where do you say this is being used as a way to stifle competition?
Yes.
And I don't know about you, but I'd like to have Apple and Samsung and RIM and whoever else in the market for a good smartphone when I'm an end consumer and I want to buy a phone.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. I mean, I ended up buying an iPhone because it was a great phone.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, is that going to be my only choice?
Well, Apple would like it to be.
Well, exactly. And I mean, I don't agree with that part of it either. They make great stuff. But, you know, after going to the RimWorld Tour, if they come up with something good, I want to be able to buy that too.
Yeah. Well, let's hope that they are able to step up to the plate and do something good. Last up, I want to talk about back to school stuff. You're a gadget blog. What are the best back to school gadgets in your mind?
Well, there's quite a few out there. I mean, you can go obviously with Apple's announcement next week. We'll see what they're going to unveil. I mean, it's not quite back to school, but they still dive in there.
Rumor is the new iPhone is a big one, but there might be a tablet. I think they're going to put off the tablet announcement. I think they're going to put off the announcement for a little bit.
And you know what? I'd heard a mini tablet.
Yeah, well, that's what we're expecting.
Like you're going to compete with Kindle and Amazon, right?
7.8-inch iPad mini. But
The back to school thing is always an area that we focus on. We had a couple posts on the blog. One that we talked about a couple weeks ago is this company, the Hard Shell Candy Cases, mm-hmm. for the different Macs.
Okay.
And nice little case. Just sort of didn't get a chance to get my hands on it. Put it up last week, or I believe it was 2 weeks ago. But back to school is one of those times. I think it's a real kick into the season. You think it's a ways away, but it's sort of like back to school and then Christmas, right?
It's just right on top.
And this is a great time of the year for retailers, and especially for people like us and yourself, to get ramped up with some good products.
Absolutely. Well, it's VancouverGadgets.ca is the site. Ben Abel is the co-founder. And thanks for your time. I wish you and your family a happy back-to-school season.
Yeah, no kidding. My wife's a teacher. She's like, oh, I can't believe I got to go back to work yesterday. Today she was okay.
Yeah, there we go.
She was a little more used to it today.
There you go. Thanks. Yeah. Ben Abel, VancouverGadgets.ca.
Thanks, Steve. Take care.
Julian Sanders, computer manager at London Drugs in Saskatoon, joins me. How are you keeping, Julian?
Oh, pretty good. How are you doing, Steve?
I am doing good. Now, Julian, do you use your iPhone as your main camera like the rest of us?
I do, yeah. I have a lot of high-end DSLR equipment, but it's just too big and bulky to carry with me everywhere.
Isn't that sad? I think it's kind of sad that we've invested so much. I can remember when I went digital from my film cameras, that it was kind of like all that good gear that I dreamt so much about sitting there and just not using it anymore.
Now, yeah, same thing. That I had a 2-megapixel digital camera was my first one, and it was a big change in quality back then, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to tell you. You know, the first digital cameras we showed on our TV show were 640 by 480.
Wow, yeah.
And they were expensive, and they went through batteries like nobody's business.
I remember the first one I played with even saved right to floppy.
Yeah, oh, really? Well, okay, enough of a walk down memory lane. Let's bring us up to date. Now, the thing I wanted to talk to you today about is lens options, because people, especially with their iPhones, they're adding third-party lenses that will give them telephoto or wide-angle options.
Yeah, and it gives you a lot more flexibility, a lot better quality too, because it's not just an app, it's not doing it with software. If you add in the hardware outside the camera, it gives you far better results.
Really? That surprised me. So the lens itself is going to go right over top of the lens on our iPhone. And I guess number one is you've got to take your iPhone out of the case when you're doing these sorts of things.
Yeah, for the most part, yeah. Some of them even come with cases that accommodate the lens, so you don't have to fiddle as much. My favorite, though, you do have to take your phone out of the case.
Good. So tell me about your favorite.
It's the Ollo Clip. It's been...
O-L-L-O.
Right, yeah, O-L-L-O Clip. Ollo's okay. Actually I in Spanish.
Oh, okay.
So they're...
that's how they're getting around to Apple's eye suing.
You got it, yeah.
Okay.
So it's a double-sided lens. So one side has a fisheye. It slides over the corner of your phone, mm-hmm. and gives you a far greater field of view. It's really nice for creative applications. A lot of people that are into Instagram and sharing photos through other apps use it a lot for creating better landscapes, because mm-hmm. you can capture a lot more when you can see. The field of view on an iPhone camera is quite limited,
yes.
So the fisheye is nice. You can see everything that you're missing. It kind of adds some distortion effects too, so you can have some fun. Then you the one side is fisheye, the other side's wide angle, so it'll give you a better group shot. So a lot of times people are grabbing snapshots of them with their friends, especially when you're turning the camera around on yourself. Yeah. You can easily fit about 4 or 6 people in from an arm distance away, so it gives you that little bit more that you can fit in.
Yeah, so that shot where you're holding it just the arm distance away and you're just taking the picture back goes from 2 people now to maybe 4 people you can get in that shot. That's pretty cool. Now, is it software as well as hardware?
No, it's only hardware. It works with any app, so you can shoot video with it. I've used it before to take pictures of kids, too, because kids move around a lot, so it's nice when it's wide angle. You can grab them faster. My favorite app for capturing the photos is Camera Plus, because it lets you take photos in a burst.
Yeah.
And you can expose the you can take an exposure different from where you're focusing.
Now, how much is the Oloclip? What does it cost?
$79.99.
Oh, so it's not all that expensive.
No, it's and it's great for people just learning about photography, too, if you're just trying to get a little more serious, because it gives you that creative flair.
Now, is it quick to install? Like, I mean, I carry my camera around in a rugged case all the time. My phone around, my camera.
Phone around in
a rugged case all the time. So is it quick to install it?
It depends on the case that you have to take off. I use a Griffin case that doesn't have the double shell, so I just slide off the rubber and pop on the Oloclip on the corner. So it just slides on.
Once your phone is exposed, it's quick to install.
Right.
It just slides on. Yeah, see, I use one of the Otter, the Uber cases that's designed to allow a tank to run over it. So it takes me a few minutes to get the darn phone out of there.
Yeah, my wife uses one of those too. So we usually use mine when we're using the Oloclip.
Okay, so the Oloclip at $79. That sounds like a must-have. I think that's a great idea. But there are other options.
Right, yeah. One of the ones that is quite popular is a Zoom, because a lot of people take their iPhones with them into nature. So if you wanted to do different shots with the telephoto, there's a Logix Pro Zoom Kit, and it has it's a little different than the Oloclip, a little different to install. It comes with a hard shell plastic case that snaps on the iPhone, and then you screw in a telephoto lens that's about 4.5 inches long. Now, when you're dealing with telephoto, if you move just a little bit, the image can be blurry. So it also has a tripod that comes with it. So it's a miniature tripod that you can set anywhere. So it lets you get that scenic shot maybe closer up. Or if you're looking to get the nice, really tight detail in environment, like in a concert, you could even try it out there. It really gives you that closer up feeling, right?
But you should be warned that the vibrations will, everything will distort that particular photo if you're doing telephoto. And it makes the camera a little bit top heavy. So you've got to know what you're doing a little bit with this one.
Yeah, and the Logix guys have a neat trick, because they have a zoom ring, so you get to pick a little bit. It goes from 4 to 8 times, just with a little spin of the lens, so you don't have to use the software zoom, which will also increase your picture quality.
Okay, so it's up to 8 times zoom through the optics of the lens, so that's going to increase the quality a fair bit. It's not an uber powerful zoom lens, but it is going to make a difference.
Right.
And it's $50.
Yeah, so it's great for people that are just using it casually, because it's only $50. Yeah.
Okay, so that's our option. So we've got for wide angle and fisheye, which is a kind of a lot more of the social type photography, we've got the Oloclip. And for telephoto people, we've got the Logix Telephoto Zoom, which is, so they're $80 and $50 respectively. Julian Sanders, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Steve.
So Art, what are your birthday plans after the show tonight?
I'm going for dinner with my lady friend.
Okay, where are you going?
We're going to a place called Peckinpah in Gastown. It's a barbecue place.
Oh, really? I haven't heard of that one. Is it good?
I've never been there, but because of the Food and Wine Show, they've come here, and I've had a pulled pork sandwich, and it was delicious.
Okay, so what are you going to... Now, what's your favorite barbecue?
Oh, I'd have to say beef brisket.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I like
slow-cooked
foods,
beef.
Yeah. Well, I like foods that I don't... It's too much work to make at home, too.
Mmm. Yeah.
Because you know that, yeah, because like...
So like Cipino or something, which is just like a lot labor intensive.
Yeah, well, yeah. I don't want to spend 4 hours making something that I can buy.
Yeah, yeah. I feel that way about a lot of things.
That's so true.
So now I do have one telling question for you. I want to return to your birthday theme, but not so much because it's your birthday, but because I'm finding the social networking aspect of this stuff fascinating.
Okay.
Let's return to your Facebook account. You've got like 150 some odd now birthday greetings, and they just keep pouring in as the world shows its love for Art Factora.
What's not to love?
This is your Facebook account. Mm-hmm. How many people have said happy birthday to you on your wall that you don't know who they are?
I'd have to say about a half dozen.
Yeah?
And part of it is flattering because I think maybe they were fans at comedy shows that remembered my name and added me on. And I'm at the point where I'll just say yes to everybody as long as it doesn't look like a spam account. And then
So you have no filter on saying yes on Facebook?
No. No, because I have
to. You're a comedian. You've got to build a following.
Exactly. And if somebody's willing to go out there and add me on because they saw me at a comedy club or I don't know, MC an event, then I have to say yes.
Do you ask for it?
Not
to. Do you say that you stand there on stage and say, I'm Art Factora, F-A-C-T-O-R-A?
No.
You don't?
No. I don't.
Okay. You don't ask for it. Do you see comedians doing that?
Yes.
Make me your friend?
Uh-huh. Yes, I do. I do. I don't because mostly because I forget and because I'm never really the headliner. And I don't want to take anything away from the guy who people have technically come to see.
Well, they've technically come to see you.
Well, no. I'm just filler before they get to the good guys.
You're forcing them to see you.
Exactly.
Last bit of business is reminding you, drop by the website, because this podcast, which you probably have only heard part of and you want to listen to the whole thing, is available on Dottotech. More importantly, we also have a sling box or two we are giving away as it's Sling Box September here on Dottotech. You can win a sling box. Of course, we have links there to all of our videos and all of the different guests who we visited with on the show today.
And we're guaranteed to give both sling boxes away because I already have one.
We are always guaranteed to give away. You always ask, and I always say no. It's like we're like an old married couple.
Well, this
already.
Time I'm not going to say yeah. Ask because I don't need one.
Yeah, but you if I
do want a good one though. I know
you do want one though. You
do want one. Those look fancier. It's like I do have a Corvette, but I see you've got a shinier, newer Corvette. So.
So yeah, well, that's going to be us and the iPhones next week, right?
Yes.
It's going to be look at that. I need that. I don't know why, but I'm gonna need that. It's bigger. It's shinier. It's slipperier. And Steve Martin came out with a great line about the iPhone. He says, how do they make the prime characteristics of the iPhone are they're shiny and they're slippery. Because he keeps dropping his, apparently.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah, you definitely need the case. Listen, that's it. We have run out of time for the day. Art Factora has to head off for his birthday dinner, mm-hmm. birthday barbecue, and I'm going to go and probably work on the website or something. I slave away. We'll see you next week. Next week, App Wednesday.
Nice.
Yes, App Wednesday. Join us then for more Dottotech.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.